Well, that was Kate McClurkin with I'm Going to Be a Country Girl Again, and I just thought I couldn't resist it because Kate says, all the lights of Sydney don't amount to an acre of green. Well, actually they do now, because our acres of green are going to be turning on the lights of big cities from here on in, I think. Now, I've got Cameron at Inverell waiting. I'm just going to bring him in now. Cameron, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Margaret.
Fantastic. I don't know if you heard the intro. I just said all the main theme from that song I just played is all the lights of Sydney don't amount to an acre of green. I'm going to be a country girl again. I mean, I moved up here 26, 7, 8 years ago thinking it was going to be a quiet, peaceful country lifestyle. But things are on the move, aren't they? Things are changing. Cameron, you were at that meeting last week in Gyra. Can you tell us a bit about it?
Yes. Okay. There's a bit of a long tail there. We've got a bit of time to talk about it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is our listeners are, you know, I'm deciding for our listeners that they need to know about this, so I hope they're interested. Yeah.
You know, I think they do. And just so my history, I grew up in Sydney, moved to Armidale in 1980. Now moved out of Armidale to rural village.
Yep.
And look, I am seeing the change. So, the meeting in Gyra was by the Burralong community, which is west of Armidale, probably 30 km or a bit north.
Yeah.
Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
It's more a rural district. I'd like to start with when I was living in Armidale, when I was living in Sydney. Those urban environments become your mindset of how the whole world is.
Yeah.
And, like, I've really experienced that transition to realise that you only have to go 5 or 10 kilometres from the Armidale, and you're in a very different landscape with a very different economy, and it functions also socially by necessity for that productive landscape very differently.
That's right. I mean, I was out there early this morning moving some sheep around or being helped to move some sheep around, I might add. I'm incredibly grateful to people that came out to give me a hand, and because, you know, we're experiencing some very, very wet weather and wet ground, which is meaning things are a little bit, I mean, it's great, but a bit harder to get vehicles around and stock. So,
The issues that stress rural people are very different to the ones that stress, I mean, there's some common ones, but
yeah,
also ones that are different. So the meeting with Burralong is because, and this, by the time I finish, I hope I bring it back to people listening in Armidale, because it actually, well, I am concerned. I can't be absolutely sure, but I do believe they have a reason to consider that to be an impact for them.
Yeah. I mean, to cut to the chase, Cameron, what we're talking about is the fact that there's a big proposal for a very big wind farm at Burralong. That's kind of that's what has created some concerns. But it's part of the renewable energy zone, or the REZ, as you say. I did go to an open day, it's probably over a year ago, more than that, with this Burralong, when the Burralong proposal was being sort of demonstrated, or, you know, open day, if you like, at the bowling club in Armidale. And to be honest, I was absolutely shattered when they told me that they were proposing 300-metre high towers. Anyway, take it away, Cameron. I don't want to take your thunder, but I just thought people should know that this is out in the, as you say, these very, very rural landscapes, very big projects.
Yeah, it's not just Burralong. This wind farm, which is one of many, south of Armidale, Walker area, over the REZ, it put in from probably west of Urala, hiking up past Invergowrie, Burralong, through maybe a little bit of southwest of Gyra, maybe even keeping further north towards the Langwathen and even southwest of Ben Lomond.
Wow.
Now, as you mentioned,
very big area.
Yes. And look, it's not a definite yet, but there's a drive to install these major wind farms in Northern State. And the meeting at Burralong was to educate both landholders who might be considering hosting wind turbines, where they will get an income, neighbours who will get some compensation, perhaps the neighbours, to educate them on the legal environment that's going on here, the technical issues. And just for your listeners, who I think it's important to let your listeners know, I believe in global climate change since about 1974. And I do believe it's a serious concern for us, particularly it's not so much the temperature change and the climate change as how 8 billion human beings on the planet are going to respond to the changes that will happen quite rapidly and catch whole nations off guard potentially. So that's the mess I see happening. So it's important to mention that because I'm going to talk about the downsides of these wind turbines that are very significant. A lot of like me to begin with before I got involved, I just went, renewable energy, great, we need to move there. Wind, what harm there can be? Big towers on a rural landscape, no problem.
Well, that's, that definitely seems to be the attitude of, you know, the cities that let's not make any bones about this. The large transmission lines that are being proposed to carry the power are there to carry power back to the major cities.
Yes, so all this is to supply big cities.
Yeah.
And that's part of the challenge for rural people. We're a very small in number, and everybody knows there's an urgent need to migrate to renewables, so why would you be objecting and what are the wind turbines? Now, the core issue there is not actually visual, but it's actually a thing called infrasound, which we'll just talk about, and the implications.
Well, for a lot of people, forgive me for interrupting, Cameron, but for a lot of people, you know, the visual side of it is pretty alarming as well. But I mean, I'm struck by the irony that forever people have had this idea that, you know, they can either be attracted to the big lights, as that song said, all the lights of Sydney don't amount to an acre of green. So they could have the, you know, all the flashiness and convenience of city living, or they could have a little bit more discomfort, inconvenience, but enjoy an undisturbed, peaceful, restful rural environment. That sort of is going fast, isn't it? That separation.
Look, like lots of dark night skies, we are losing fireplaces. We have people who travel, for example, who visit Ben Lomond, and they just love the fact that they meet this small, quiet village. But it's quiet. They've got their own lifestyle, but to even know that it exists and they can visit if they really need a bit of peace and quiet is a very significant psychological comfort almost in a very rushed and increasingly compressed modern world.
Yeah.
I'd like National Park to be able to know that they're there and you can visit and you can have that ancestral touch with natural wilderness. It's a very important mental health thing. I don't think it's underrated. And, yeah. And like getting out of the city and going to the rural country, which is how we get our tourism and part of our economy. Yeah. It is a very important thing. We don't want to lose that. And look, with the visual, you're right. One of the big things that I don't think many people realise is the wind turbines I've seen to date are the old generation 150-metre turbines.
So that's 150 metres high in terms of the mast from the ground level.
That's on the ground to the tip of the blade.
Yeah, and that's one.
Half is about 100 metres up.
Yeah, they're fairly visible. They're pretty big. I've stood under one and on a tour port many years ago now when this was just an idea for New England, long before the res was announced. And I went down to Canberra, but that was, as you say, that first generation, pretty tiddly little wind towers, half the size of what's now being proposed.
Well, the 150 ones are the sort of, called just recently, were the advanced generation, but now they're being left behind. Before that, they were 70, 75 metres. And the standards in Australia were built around New Zealand standards, late 1990s, and then I think 2010. Where, again, the wind turbine technology was much smaller. The thing is, when you double the size of the blades and the swoop area is a lot more than just the increase in the height. So if you put a modern 250-metre wind turbine, I mean, they're not just big, they are gigantuan. And depending on your perspective, you can see them as wonderful, amazing technological marvels, which they are, and, you know, visually change the landscape, but maybe over time you can adapt and go, well, that's our landscape now, and your sense of place adapts to that.
Yeah.
If you put one in Sydney Harbour, it would be a lot taller than the top of the Harbour Bridge. We're talking about gigantuan. And 250 metre is the lower tide of the new generation. So these are the kind of wind turbines that were designed in Europe to go offshore. Or part of the reason I'm going to talk about it, and that's noise and infrasound. But we're putting that scale wind turbines on land. And let me now talk about Brulong. So when we're talking to Wind Brulong, which is just one of the many communities that have joined a group called Red for New England, REG, Numerical Four, and NE for New England, it stands for Responsible Energy Development for New England. When they had the REZ, there was not actually a body or a consultation process with the a region of landowners and the actual villages of the basin. And so Red for New England was formed to provide that collective voice, of which the Burrong community is part of that.
Yeah, and Red
for New England. They've got a website. It's very good.
Yeah, RED, digit for New England, NE. These have sprung up from communities, from volunteers, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
They are not, yes. There's been no...
It's an umbrella body.
There's been no government financing for these organisations.
No.
It's just everything's come out of, you know, scraped out of the back pockets of people who are farmers and just ordinary community people. It's just...
That's correct.
Okay.
And also, we're all doing this as busy people like everyone else, living out of our own busy lives. And for people who are property owners, when I get on to actually talking about infrasound, they are experiencing what's called an existential crisis. That is a sense of real threat to everything that they have valued, like being moved out of your home, possibly. Now, to the extent it's going to be realised, there's some uncertainty. But my background that brought me in to understand this, not spoken about much downside, which I think other people need to be aware of, because I'm from up towards the Ben Lomond community, and we had a New Zealand company wanting to do a major wind farm, a very small one actually, about 250 metre towers, a new generation, within a kilometre of our village and Glencoe. But we had, so I was on the CCC, so I saw the scientific check reports for noise and
CCC.
I didn't see the detail.
Yes, the CCC.
It's a community consultative process where you get some community members, and it's part of the state planning process to approve these wind farms. Mm. As I understand, local government doesn't get a choice about these. These are state significant developments.
Yep.
So that a decision is made with a state planning process. And the community consultative committee is part of that process. If it's not well understood and not poorly run, sometimes in some country areas, the only people who run are the ones who want the wind turbines because they want to make money. In our case, we were a fairly progressive community when we were first put. And so I was on it with a bit of a science background as well. I could really look at the technical report. And that becomes part of my story. And I began really keen about this wind farm development.
Oh.
One of the things that happened is there's two wind farms north of us, White Rock and Sapphire.
Yeah, and they're well known. They're quite visible, but they are earlier generation, and they were the first in our region.
But more importantly to this, more importantly to this story is they were fully assessed under state planning laws as all the noise was assessed. There would be no problem. Oh. When they were constructed, there's a follow-up assessment process at state government level. All is in place. There is no. Well, we got to talk to people who are living and being impacted to this day from noise, but also more significantly from infrasound to this day.
Right, Cameron.
And since they've had to moderate the operation of that wind farm.
Oh, okay. Right. Can we?
There's a lot of. Yep.
Oh, sorry. We're sort of skirting around the subject of sound. I mean, the general.
I'm getting onto that.
The general feeling is that these wind farms are silent. They just blow. The blades just blow around in the wind and doesn't really make a noise. Can you please explain to us what the sound is and what all that's about?
Okay. Well, there's two categories of noise here, and the fact that there's two categories, there's two levels of effect, two different kinds of effect. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to audible noise, that can be irritating. Mm-hmm. Wind turbines are, for their size, fairly quiet. So if there's normal conditions, the background noise might be at the level of, when I was up there in that valley during a moderately windy time, it sort of sounded like hearing the surf beach when you're sort of 200 metres back from the beach.
Right.
So, and for these people who are later impacted, it took them 3 months to realise they were being affected.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't the audible noise. They went, oh, well, yeah, we weren't about that. We can live with that. They had all these other health changes that progressively developed over 3 months. And they didn't even associate it with a wind pump. There's a thing called turbine sickness, and this is where the infrasound comes in. Infrasound is simply noise that you can't hear. It's below about 50 hertz. In fact, the significant noise for wind farms is below 20 hertz, around 25 seconds. Mm-hmm. And the key pressure waves that emanate out downwind from a wind turbine, the main pressure wave is when one of the three blades travels in front of the metal tower that supports the structure.
Right.
And you get this compression.
Between the blade and the physical tower.
Passes in front of the tower. You've got this compression that happens.
Right, okay.
Now, turbine sickness is a bit like, and I find it, the reason why I picked up on the rheology of turbine sickness, do you remember carpal tunnel syndrome?
Yes, I certainly do.
It was denied for ages, and then it turns out that it was actually a physiological problem.
People thought it was whinging secretaries who just didn't want it a day old.
Yeah, people just, damn, work cover, yeah, yep. And then, you know, I spent a lot of time with post-viral infection syndrome, people with MEC, that's right back to the 1980s, and that was completely denied for decades, and then we've got long COVID. Turbine sickness is a kind of disease impact. It doesn't affect all individuals. It's got a whole range of symptoms where they tend to be different for individuals. Symptoms are like headaches, sensations, depression, changing mood, agitation, a sense of compelling doom, for no apparent reason, like elevated anxiety, migraines, and most importantly, not able to sleep properly for reasons they can't identify, they're not getting refreshing sleep, so they become really sleep deprived. And this is reported around the world for the last 2 decades, and I believe genuinely suppressed, like NECFS and things like that.
Yeah, so the difficulty with those symptoms is that they are ones that could be attributed to other sort of to either invention or some completely unrelated mental health condition.
Yes, they're very easily dismissed. The story of these people who are living with one, so listeners sort of understand the process, they hear the noise in the car, and we want to be hearing a little bit of noise. There's always some impact. That's fine. Then they had these changes. They didn't attribute to the wind farm because until they went away. But all of a sudden, they had a really good night's sleep.
Yeah.
Soundly, and they felt so much better, and the headaches went away, and the mood changes. They felt good and light. Then they came back home, and then these things came back, and then they went away again. And this went on for 3 months until the 3 month time they finally connected that this was really affecting their life. They were really struggling. They were having all these medical appointments and specialists were going, something's changed. We're really not coping. We can't sleep. You know, our lives are falling apart. Sorry, there's a truck going by.
Yep.
And so this is a subtlety, and the wind industry can so well marginalize it. You've got to understand the renewable and wind energy, this is a $100 billion industry, multi-billion dollar industry, just like the nuclear industry and the fossil fuel industry. It's just as much commercial interest to maximize profit as any other. They're not wonderful, soft, green-thinking commercial entities here. These are people who are out to maximize their profit.
And not only that, a lot of them are former fossil fuel energy providers who are transitioning into a new form of creating energy, but the underlying culture and principles of, you know, for profit, etc., remain as robust as ever.
Yes, but the question is, how far is infrasound going to travel with this new generation of turbines?
That's an interesting question.
So this wind farm is only going to be 40 or so kilometres west wind of Armidale, for example, as a fairly major population centre. Now, as part of rolling out the REZ and wind farms, there was some legislation quickly passed to ban wind farms from being within 10 or 20 kilometres of any significant urban rural centre. And I'm pretty sure I know why they passed that in a hurry. But they still, you see, when you do accurate assessment of measuring these very low frequencies, good reports of very good Australian acousticians, the expert in the field. That's their field.
What are they called, Cameron?
Acousticians. Like, think of acoustics.
Acousticians.
They're acousticians.
Right.
Yeah, because noise is a very complex phenomenon to really map, but in terms of human response.
Yeah,
yep. Okay. Looking at some Victoria contexts, Bridgewater is a wonderful study where they actually had a very comprehensive study done to investigate the links between people in residential houses and the impact of that wind farm, their physiological symptoms, and the actual the wind farm operation.
So that's
a places like around. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to confirm that study is called the Bridgewater study, and it's based in Victoria.
Yes, you can look that up.
You
can look that up on the internet. Bridgewater. It was run by Pacific Power. There's a very long video that goes 2.5 hours, but the technical part only goes 1/2 hour. But basically, Bridgewater, which is owned by a Chinese company, ended up to their later regret to really investigate this phenomena. And the person, Steve Cooper, who's a world-leading acoustician, he does assessments for, like, example, the RAF people, World Family Airport. You know, in terms of industrial parts, he's very competent. And he does a really good investigation. See, one of the things that's happened with past research with the impact of wind farms is when they've done past studies, they've only asked people what they heard. They haven't asked about physiological symptoms. Physiological symptoms are the core for infrasound impacts. And by the way, just so your listeners understand, another thing that alerted me to there's an issue here and a cover up is that when I asked when I was on this CCC committee, and we're looking at the reports of this proposed wind farm, and where the community giving access to the specialist report to understand the project and the impacts. One of the first questions I ask is for the noise people going, oh, you're mapping this noise and telling us that this is how the noise will be and there'll be no impact. You know, where's your mention in this report of infrasound, the lower frequency? And the response was, oh, we don't measure that at all because we're not required under New South Wales. So it's completely blotted out from any assessment at all.
That's really, it's a really interesting point, Cameron, because for many people, the idea of sound is only audible sound. But what I guess we've got to understand scientifically is that sound, I mean, you only have to own a dog that howls at a siren you can't hear to know that sound is a lot more than just audible sound. But to actually embed that in these studies for these massive projects is another step, and that's starting to be recognised now, but it's, yeah, anyway, keep going, yeah.
Well, the official assessment, even from a federal government level, is that infrasound does not impact human physiology.
Right, okay, that's the current, political position, but it's not necessarily the scientific.
Well, what did the GMRC came to when they were asked this question, when they formed their policy, and the wind industry, we noticed, very carefully misquoted this. The quote was, the NHMRC would accept the official scientific view on infrared sound and humans.
What
is that? There is no impact. However, if you looked at what the statement was, what the NHMRC did when they did a review is they said, from the current research base, we cannot determine or draw the conclusion that there's an impact of infrared sound on humans. However, we found that the research base was very poor and not sufficient to form a final view. And they then funded a couple of million dollars to do some studies, which have only recently been completed. So it wasn't true to say that there is no impact, just that the research hasn't been done. And we've seen stories like in other industries, like asbestos and mesothelioma and the industry and health impact. This is, you know, we're familiar with it. So, and look, there's also is evidence of human impacts. For example, one of the mysteries was happening with technicians that maintain military jets who have to check the engines on the tarmac. They are subject to strong infrasound, a whole range of frequencies.
Mm.
Now, one of the mysteries was some of their personnel were dropping dead with heart attacks in their 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
Maybe there was something going wrong. An investigation into that worked out the physics is this. While infrasound can't be heard, our cells feel the pressure waves that go through the body. And in those individual cases where they're working with intense infrasound, the cells were responding by strengthening and stiffening the cell walls, including tissues that need to be flexible. And over an extended period of time, that is why they were dropping dead of heart attacks out of the blue in their 40s and 50s, because there was a physiological direct impact.
Yeah.
Now, I want to just finish in Victoria, because this is relevant to listeners in Armidale.
Yeah.
With the old generation of 150 wind turbines down in Victoria, when you actually measure infrasound, which is not done by the wind company, the noise assessment companies, sounds 80 kilometres away were being impacted by infrasound. You could measure the pulse waves going through the towns over 80 kilometres away. And that's with the old-style 2 to 3 megawatt, 150-metre turbine generation. So when we're going to go to 250-metre and 6 megawatt capacity, we're building all these in the REZ in what is, relatively speaking, a quite dense rural landscape. And I believe, I can't be sure yet, but I am very concerned there is going to be real infrasound impacts that are going to impact communities and health. We're going to find out after construction is done because it's not being properly investigated and it's not assessed in terms of development approval. And if this one goes ahead west of Armidale, because these infrasound travel downwind parallel to the landscape, it doesn't go up into space in the sunrise hemisphere. If you look at the impacts of infrasound and noise, it's downwind parallel to the ground for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 80 kilometres on the old path. It's going to be 120 kilometres. When there's a prevailing wind, I suspect, I can't be sure, but I suspect there will be these insidious, but quite influential to daily living impacts, potentially for even Armidale. And that's my concern. I don't know if it's going to be realised or not.
Well, I mean, it's a concern for everybody in the landscape, but what we're saying is that you're going to get a multiplicity of, there's a possibility of a multiplicity of impacts if that sound then does have that impact on a large and dense population centre as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Now, there's a number of other issues. By the way, there is the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I believe in identifying a problem to work out a solution. So, because I believe in renewable energy, we actually rejected this proposal in Ben Lomond because we knew the impact from a much smaller one. We're going to have 24 250-plus-metre turbines, and by the way, I can always add more height on later. It's just the minimum. I'm going to be within 1.5 kilometres of two villages. So when we looked at the on-the-ground real-life impact that we learned from people in the other wind farms, there was definitely going to be a significant impact, and some of us would now be able to continue. There was a real possibility some of us wouldn't be able to continue to live. But one of the problems is once you get a wind farm and there is a problem, you try and sell your house, you get much less value for it because from the ground understanding that wind farms have an impact, while it's not officially recognised, it is being recognised by general populations.
That's right. And, of course, you know, people can be trapped by their poverty and generally often people that are living in small rural villages or even in large rural towns, they've got economic constraints on their ability to move anyway.
That's right. And I'm very concerned about walking. They're going to be surrounded by, like, you know, there's not just 100 of these. There's thousands of these new generation turbines going in you know, like 100 or 150 kilometres on because we're going to be the biggest generator of renewable energy. I want to talk about a solution here because...
Yeah, I think the community needs to know that amongst the five different REZs or renewable energy zones, the New England one is probably planned to be responsible for twice to three times as much as any other single REZ in New South Wales. That's just talking New South Wales, yeah. Yeah, do go on. We'll have to wrap soonish, but anyway, keep going. Yep.
So look, with any generation technology, nuclear, hydro, wind, solar, the key is any of these generation technologies is placement in the right place. So, for example, if it's coal, you need to be near a source of coal. Or a transport hub for coal. If you're doing nuclear, you need to be near water. If you're doing hydro, naturally you need a dam. All of these different generation technologies all have their positive and their negative impacts. Mm-hmm. So wind and solar are no different. Wind And, of course, every industry that wants to pump their thing wants to downsize the negative in the public view and promote the positive.
Yeah.
This is something that I just happened to notice. And I was talking to our wind farm company, and I pointed out to them, if you look at the wind energy maps for the 150 old generation turbines, you'll see why they want to build all these wind farms up here in the northern tableland along the ridgeline.
Yeah.
Because that's where you get the maximum wind.
So that's crude sort of wind speed maximized, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, the wind blows over the ridges, and if you've got your wind turbines along there, they get peak maximum bang for buck, if you like, for your investment.
Yeah.
So I pointed out that when you look at the wind energy map for the new generation of wind turbines, which is 50 meter plus, all of a sudden, all of Western New South Wales has the same wind potential energy as the ridge lines up here.
They hadn't noticed it.
They were really surprised, and I went, how could that be? And I said, well, I can explain that to you. Because, as I said, 50-meter wind turbines are higher than the harbour bridge, okay? They are so tall that this new generation can tap into the laminar flow of the wind across the continent simply because the Earth is rotating. So they can go anywhere. They don't need to be in this dense rural landscape. And furthermore, there are much larger properties out west that can benefit from the economic benefit of stabilization for their wind production business. They've got big enough properties to own the noise and the impact. The only shortfall is there isn't currently the major transmission lines to collect that power and transport to the big city. So this is the way. There's a huge resistance now that's going to hold up our transition to renewables. And I'm not able to get this to high level of government, but this is the solution. We've already spent $3 billion just developing a major inland rail route. Not even building it, but $3 billion just to develop the rail. It does show how much our rail line north is actually worth as a future transport corridor, not necessarily trains, but a transport corridor. But we're staying on this. The point is, part of the transition to renewable energy is we also have to have dam storage and battery storage facilities. There's a whole lot of plans of these battery storage facilities from northern Queensland all the way down through to Snowy 2. So to build a major backbone in new, like an East Link, down through Western New South Wales, we open up the western areas for also to be the main source of large-scale industrial wind, rather than compromising land confluence. And you're also connecting up South Australia, Snowy 2, Victoria. Further, it's a secure route for our future stability of our electrical infrastructure. I believe this is the solution to enable us to get over all this conflict and move forward more rapidly to develop large-scale wind in the right place, keep the solar farms up here, and some smaller-scale wind. This is the solution, but you can't get it through. Now, I've got to say one more point, Margaret. That's really important that I want to say.
Yeah.
We are doing this transition. Most people think of our energy transition to renewable energy, and they only think of generally solar and wind. What we're really doing is we're transitioning from the old 1900s, one centralized power station and distributing the power out to very long distances that require lots of transmission lines.
That's via our amazing grid, yes.
Yeah, what we're actually migrating to is a more biological level for our electrical system. So we had no choice back in the 1900s when we first started to learn to make electricity. What we're doing now is we're developing localized generation and local use, so for example, solar on roof, and there's also going to be wind turbines that are quiet that can go on roof soon to complement solar, will greatly improve household independence. So the real dynamic here is transitioning to localized generation with a degree of sparing. Now that reduces the level of grid you have to develop because you're only sparing the shortfalls and excesses, not the total supply anymore over long distance.
Yeah. No, it's a really big...
That's the real revolution we're in.
In which case,
we need a diversity of generation technologies and go where they belong with that change geometry of our grid. So that basically comes to a close. So credit to Brewalong, credit to the Dubai community, by the way. It was the Dubai people who assessed that proposal and said, this will not work here. Credit to the Dubai community, they all work well. They're a very small community. Credit to them. They're the ones who did the work.
Yeah.
Who you mentioned in your previous speaker.
Yeah.
They're just taking a bit of credit for it.
Oh, I think it's a team effort all around. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, want Armidale people to know, us rural communities, we are facing a real conflict here. A lot of us believe in renewable energy as well, or our need for global climate change. Not everybody's sort of into climate denial. We are facing a real threat. I want people to know.
Fantastic. So those were the issues that were, I suppose, raised and discussed last Wednesday, the 7th of August, at the meeting. Yeah. And if people want to know more, Cameron, they can go Google RED for RED, digit for NE, RED for Renewable Responsible Energy Development.
Turbine thickness, look up turbine thickness and infrasound, and look for some YouTube videos of other wind farms around the world. There's some great examples in Canada.
Yeah.
But also there's other issues for ratepayers in the sense in that with solar and wind, we don't think councils are assessing the level of waste. I mean, I can't remember the cost of our new waste facility in Armidale, but it's only like 10 or 20 million.
It was about 14 million. And
14 million. Mm. Well, there's a huge waste issue that's coming with this. There's a huge amount of transport and road costs. There is a massive amount of gravel to do the service roads where wind turbines are built. They are metres deep.
Mm.
There's a whole lot of other issues as well.
Yeah, there are.
And there's also the decommissioning. If we get localised wind on houses and there's a similar thing like we had with solar, rooftop solar, the financial economic viability of these wind farms may simply fall out. In which case, you've got huge stranded assets. There's no one to take responsibility for them, but maybe coming back to local council in 15 years' time.
And
there are a lot of issues. I've just mentioned noise and infrasound.
Well, I think it's really handy that we've focused a little bit on the infrasound because, you know, people I think have accepted that this idea of infrasound is a sort of, you know, a bit of baloney in a sense. Also, that's been the issue, and now the science is coming forward. Cameron, thank you so much for talking with us today. I don't think this is the end of the discussion, but it will be for today. So thank you very much for your time. And for our listeners, those are the places you can go to find out more. Of course, there's always information about new projects coming through editions of the Yooralla Wordsworth as well. And, of course, we'll be taking all of this up again after the 14th of September. So thank you so much for your time this morning, Cameron.
Pleasure.
Okay, all the best. Bye-bye.